Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Coming up on episode 319 of Wheel Bearings, we've got the Lexus RZ, the Lucid Air Pure, the new Subaru Crosstrek. Ford adds heat pumps to the Lightning. The Nissan Hyper Urban X concept is coming to the Tokyo show. Battery testing is ending in Piqua, Ohio. We've got a price for the Volvo EX30. Fixing a dent on your Rivian could be very, very expensive if you're not careful. And a whole bunch more. All that coming up next. This is episode 319 of Wheel Bearings. I am Sam Abual-Samad from Guidehouse Insights.
And I am Nicole Wakelin from The Road Reflected.
And I am Roberto Baldwin from SAE International.
And Nicole, since you were the last one to join the call, let's start with you.
Okay, I just clarify that something's wrong with iMessages? Literally, I'm like, Sam, where's the link? He's like, yeah, we're recording. I'm like, can I have the link? He's like, and it's not coming through. So I feel like it was like a who's on first.
I think iMessage is deliberately filtering out all links from Android phones.
So like so he holds up his phone. I see three links. You look at my phone, no links. So we're having this conversation where neither one of us knows what we're doing. I was only last because... Darn that apple. Okay. So I had a Subaru Crosstrek, which is fun. I like the little Crosstrek. I feel like Subaru is sort of like the poster child car for New England. Like, do you really live here if at some point in your life you haven't owned a Subaru?
Well, isn't it the only car that's allowed to be registered in Vermont?
Correct. Yeah. Legally? Right. Nothing else can be registered. Yeah. Right. Only a Subaru.
Everything else is gray market.
Right. Yeah. You need to pick another border, pick a border, move over there, register your car in another state. You can't register that garbage here. Yeah. Only Subarus. So I have the Subaru Crosstrek, which I drove at the launch back in May, I think it was. And they had the Crosstrek Wilderness that I missed the other week, which I was really sad because things went sideways at home. But yeah, this is just the straight up. This is the Crosstrek Premium in pure red. It is very red. It is very, very bright. But I like the color. I think it suits it. And I've always liked how the Crosstrek looks. Like, do you remember when I don't think they do the orange anymore. Do they still do the orange? This really bright orange my neighbor has.
That was a cool color.
It was really cool. My neighbor has one, and she was so excited when she bought it. And I still see her. I'm like, it's Laura. Like, I know, just because she's a little orange Subaru Crosstrek that goes to the neighborhood. So they redesigned stuff this year. So it's better, but I don't think it's like suddenly you get in the Crosstrek, you're like, oh, what's this? It still feels like a Crosstrek in all the right ways. It has an 11.6-inch infotainment touchscreen, giant screen, which I love. It now has wireless Apple CarPlay and Android Auto, which was cool. I always like to have wireless. I think I forget how much I appreciate wireless connectivity for your phone until you get in a car that doesn't have it, because there are some that still don't have it. You have to have a wire. And I sit down, I don't have a wire. I'm like, what is this?
Hyundais and Kias don't.
Yeah.
Hyundai has wireless. It's all over the map. Insanity.
It depends on the trim. This trim doesn't, that trim does, but on the other it's the other way around.
It's complete insanity how they figured out. Like, I have the nicest like EV, Kia Niro EV. Nope, gotta plug a wire in.
Well, yeah. Some of them it's the base trim. Like the base trims have wireless. Was it the Kona they just did a drive for? And they said wireless is coming for the full lineup, but not yet. Like, so it's still the weirdness, but like, when is it coming? Next year? When? Sometime next year in a down, it'll be an automatic over-the-air update. But it's like, when and who and how? You're like,
It'll get there when it gets there.
Exactly.
It'll be done when it's done.
It's bonkers all over the place.
It's crazy. But so the Subaru Crosstrek, not crazy. For the first time, wireless Apple CarPlay and wireless Android Auto is available on the Crosstrek. And I love it. I love having wireless. I hate having wired connectivity. I decided that's become like a must-have for me now, along with needing heated seats and a heated steering wheel, which I realized today when it got down finally into the 40s. Like, fall arrived last night in New Hampshire. It was a blammo. I woke up and I was freezing. Before that, it was warm. We had the air conditioning on in the house last night. I just need to say that's how weird the weather is. The AC was on last night. This morning, it was only 60 degrees when we woke up. I'm like, what in the house? I'm like, what is going on? So anyway, so love this little cross check. I think it's fun. You know, it's not, it looks great inside. It's comfortable. It easily sits, you know, it's got plenty of room for even tall folks in the back. Like Russ sat in the back. He wasn't squished. And it's reasonably responsive. 152 horsepower, 145 pound feet of torque. This is with a four cylinder. It's a 2 liter four cylinder. It has a CVT. I mean, if you hit the gas hard, it doesn't sound, you hear it, but it doesn't sound like it's overly struggling. Like, you're not going to panic that your car is about to just give up the ghost as you get on the highway. But it does take a second for it to figure out that you do, in fact, want it to go very fast to merge in with the traffic that is already going a very respectable.
Oh, you want to go somewhere.
It's like, yeah.
Oh, hold on.
Yeah, like, oh, you push that long pedal on the right because going is what you're,
going.
But once it does go, it's fine. So I actually really like the Crosstrek. I think it's a great little car. I thought this had pricing on it. I don't have pricing on here, which, no, yes, I do. I had to turn it around. It is, Crosstrek Premium is what I'm driving right now. And it starts at $26,145. There was $2,200 in options. How much do you think there was for the destination delivery? Sam, you go first.
I will say $995.
Robbie?
$996.
Robbie wins, $1,295. Oh. Robbie's sneaky.
Yeah, he is.
I know how to play the game.
He knows how to play the Price is Right.
And for what it's worth, there is no orange available this year.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, that's what I've been doing too.
Orange
was one of those ones they said bye-bye, no more orange. Yeah.
That was a cool shade of orange. There is a Sunblaze Pearl, which is kind of a lighter red that's got almost it's like a blood orange.
Okay.
Kind of color to it. Yeah. And then there's a pure red.
That's what I have. Pure red. Yeah. I liked the orange. I thought it, I don't know why I'm not particularly a fan of orange cars, but it totally suits the Crosstrek.
Oh, absolutely.
They have it for the WRX though.
Yeah.
Well, you can get the orange.
You want that high-vis paint, you know, on a car like that.
Look at me.
Just like wearing your reflective vest when you go out and walk the dog in the early morning, in the fall, in the winter when it's dark outside.
Exactly. It's totally exactly like that. You want to make sure that everybody can see you. So I'm a fan of this. I like driving. I think the pricing is decent. Like, so you're coming in at under 30,000, just under 30, 29,685 for the one that I'm driving. But you kind of have, you know, you've got all the features you want. You have the X mode on there. So when the snow is falling and you want to get through the snow, you can get through the snow. It has decent infotainment. It has comfortable seats. It has, you know, dual zone climate control. It has all the little things you want. Like, it's got enough features to make you feel comfortable, to make you enjoy the drive. It has the power, like I said, isn't super aggressive, but it's not so low that you're feeling it. It doesn't make you panic getting on the highway. That's where I feel like the line is on power. Does it have enough power? If you have to hit that gas early on the ramp because you know that it takes a second, that's fine. It's when you hit the gas early on the ramp and it's floored and you're still like, oh dear God, I can't do this. That's when it's not enough. As long as it can get you up to speed by the time you're on the highway, and it can do that. So I enjoy driving the Crosstrek. I like it. I think it's a fun little car. I've always liked it. I liked it better when they had orange, but I can get by with pure red instead of
fine.
Orange. Yeah, fine. If you're going to take that away from me, fine. And it can even tow. This can tow 1,500 pounds, which is not like it's going to tow giant stuff, but it can tow a little bit. And it has like roof rails on there.
Motorcycles.
Our neighbors have this tiny little trailer that they found.
Yeah.
That it would be perfect for towing behind a Crosstrek.
See, it's like you want, because sometimes you just want like a little extra. Like, I feel this is not like I'm towing my ginormous boat. It's just like a little extra stuff I need to tow. I'm a rugged outdoorsy type in my Subi.
Or, you know, if there's not enough room in the cargo area inside, you know, for the mulch, you know, you can have a little trailer, hook it up there. And grab another 1,500 pounds worth of mulch.
And put some mulch in there.
Yeah.
I always feel like when I think of the little trailers hooked up to a vehicle like this, I feel like this is something that only dads can make. Like, you're not allowed to make this until you're a dad. you cobble together a trailer where you make the sides a little bigger with a plywood.
Yes.
And then you see that trailer still on the highway at 30 years after dad made it. The plywood has some holes starting to get, but he's still like, no, it's doing the job. And you put the little plywood. That's what I picture, the little plywood reinforced trailer with stuff, bark mulch or whatever shoved in there.
And the nice thing is, you know, at that price point, you know, I mean, that's still, you know, well under 30 grand, you know, starting at 25.
Right.
You know, all wheel drive is standard.
That's the thing.
On every Subaru except the BRZ.
Right. So you've got to, you could, if you want to get the base trim and the Crosstrek, and you still have a vehicle that's pretty darn capable. You get a little bit, you know, you have enough ground clearance that you can get over light off-road stuff. You know, you're just, you know, driving to your cabin, or you're driving, you know, down a dirt road that's a little bit more rutted. You can get through the snow. I've watched Lara blast through snowbanks on this road for years. You can get through the snow. It's just enough. But, you know, actually, and on a sort of like side note, the challenge with getting cars that have extra ground clearance is if you have someone who isn't really mobile, it can be hard to get in. My mom is elderly. She has a hard time getting into a lot of cars. If it's too low, they're falling into the car because the sedan is hard. If it's too high, they can't step up. This is like a very much a just right height. She scooched right into this. She was able to swing her legs in and out without feeling like it was too high or too low. And I remember thinking as I watched her, I thought, gosh, she can't get into every car this easily. She had a much better time getting into this. So it gives you just enough ground clearance to help when it's snowy or you're a little bit off road without getting so high that it's like suddenly you're carrying a little step stool if your mom is short and not very mobile, which is what I have done on occasion. So yeah, so that was a real plus. I thought that's a really good, the step in height for this is actually just perfect. It was really good.
Subarus are very weird in that I think what happens is it comes out and then everyone's like, oh, like it, the BRZ came out and everyone's like, boo, it's not, it doesn't have enough power. The Crosstrek came out and they're like, boo, it's not a, you know, it's, what is this weird thing? Just get an Outback. And then like after like 3 years, everyone's like, oh, this car is actually really cool.
Right? It's like,
everyone just sort of comes around to it because they drive it and they're like, oh, this is cool.
Right? Like you suddenly realize you're like, okay, she's like, oh, it's just a Subaru. It's another Subaru. Oh, wait.
Conceptually, a Crosstrek is not that fundamentally different from an Outback, except that it's a bit smaller.
Yes.
And for a lot of people, you don't necessarily need the size of an Outback or the Ascent, you know, or even a Forester for that matter.
Yeah.
You know, you want something that's got, you know, the same capabilities. Like my daughter, for example, you know, she's shopping for a new car right now and she has opted not for a Subaru, but, she's living in Colorado. She wanted to get an all-wheel drive vehicle to replace her Toyota 86. And, she narrowed down her final choices to Mazda CX-30 and the Kia Sportage. And the Sportage, she decided, was just a little bit too big because she has to park on the street. So right. she street parks, curbside parks. And, you know, the smaller size, among other things, of the CX-30, she felt was a better fit for her. And, you know, same thing, you know, if you're shopping for a Subaru, if you don't necessarily need that extra space of an Outback, then, you know, the Crosstrek, as you said, with the height might be just the right fit for what you need. Well, that's why they make them in different sizes.
Right. It's interesting you're saying that your daughter's buying one, because the one other person I know who bought one within the last year, I want to say, my nephew's girlfriend there in college, she needed a new car. She wanted something that had a little bit of extra room, that could handle the New England winters, that could be easy to park where she was because she goes to school in the city, so she's in Boston. The Crosstrek is what she got.
There you go.
So see?
And my daughter's getting her CX-30 in Soul Crystal Red.
Oh, nice. Okay, good. I was like, because if she got another color, we'd have to talk to her about that.
Yeah.
We're like, what are you doing? I feel like that's abuse if you allow your child.
Yeah, like, honey, you're making a terrible. That's it. You know when to coach your kids. Well, this is the coaching moment. You have to get the red. Don't make a horrible mistake with your life. Get the red.
Don't come home on the holidays if you get.
Right. Like, don't what? Come home with a white Mazda. What's wrong with you?
Oh, it doesn't have. No, they have that nice pearl white. It's actually kind of nice.
But you're not allowed to get the pearl. You have to get the red, Robbie. Yeah,
I know.
Red is the color.
I know.
So yeah, legally. So those are my thoughts on the
legally. Those are the color.
Legally, I like the Crosstrek. Yeah, you can only buy a Subaru in Vermont, and you can only buy red in a Mazda. Those are the rules that we live by at Wheel Bearings.
They're pretty simple rules. It's not that hard.
Yeah,
Life doesn't need to be difficult. Just abide by those rules and you're good.
And you're good. That's all we're asking.
Everything else is fair game.
Right. Do whatever else you want, but follow those two rules.
All right. Robbie, what have you been driving?
What have I been? I forgot. a lot of cross-track talk. I drove the Lucid Air Pure, the all-wheel drive version. I didn't get the rear-wheel drive. I don't think they had it. Like, I got the all-wheel drive version, and then like 10 minutes later, like, the email came through with the with the price for the rear-wheel drive version. So I've driven – the only Lucid Air I haven't driven at this point is the Sapphire.
Ooh.
Yeah. And so I can tell you that if you're still looking – if you're looking at the Lucid Air and you're thinking to yourself, oh, should I get the Pure? You know, it doesn't have the glass roof. It doesn't have, you know, blah, blah, blah. Just get the Pure. It's the glass roof is, I mean, they look cool, but it's heavier. Like, some, even though they, you know, they've coated it, you're still going to get glare. Sometimes it's a little too bright. Sometimes it gets hot if you're like in really, really hot area. just get the one, just get the regular old roof. If you want something without a roof, get in a convertible. That's my new.
Wait, so what we need is a convertible Lucid. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, we need a convertible Lucid, like the next
totally
Lucid.
Totally reasonable. They should add that.
That's it. Yeah. I mean, it's a bad idea for that company, to be honest, to do a convertible, because convertible take rates are pretty low. But if they did,
at some point in the future, once they've stabilized and got their volume up with the Gravity, then they can think about doing a convertible.
Yeah, you got to do. You know, everyone needs to have that. That crossover, that SUV in their lineup, so they can do other things. Just ask Porsche about that and how.
But I would love to see a convertible with the Lucid hardware.
Oh yeah, because it'd be so light. They're like their motor is just this tiny little thing, and it kicks out. It's insane. Like how yeah, their engineering is and their packaging is bonkers, and they could definitely just throw that motor and like a 60 kWh. Or 70 kWh battery pack in a convertible, and it would be outstanding.
That would be an interesting resto mod. You know, build an old Miata with a Lucid motor and a battery.
Oh yeah.
Oh, that would be funky.
Yeah, that would be good.
Get right on that. You got a Miata, Sam. Make that happen.
Make it happen. They're so bonkers efficient. Anyway, yeah, so I drove the Pure. I had the all-wheel drive version, which I'm trying to figure out what the starting price is. Because they didn't have a Monroney for this. It came from the fleet, but the fleet didn't have it. It doesn't matter.
The website says 82.4.
Yeah, so it's 82.4, and then the rear-wheel drive is 77-something.
77.4.
So yeah, so originally, a million years ago in the before times, there was, I think they were talking about like 60,000 for the entry for the Pure. And then everyone started making EVs and realized, ooh. And then, you know, we had issues with getting all, you know, the parts you need for all these vehicles. And that was tough. And so everything jumped. You can ask Ford about that and look at the sporadic and insane price changes when it comes to the F-150 Lightning. So, yeah. So I drove the Pure. It's the... slowest loose, I don't know. It's got zero to
slow.
60.
Slow is a relative term.
I was gonna say so slow.
Like a neighbor drove by, and my neighbors know what I do for a living, and he stuck his head out the window of his vehicle, and he said, "Hey, how do you like it?" And I'm like, "Oh, it's actually really nice. You know, this is the Pure version. It's the, you know, it's the all wheel drive of it." He's like, "Yeah, my wife wants it, but she wants the fast one." I'm like, "This is plenty fast. It's 0 to 60 in 3.8 seconds." Three.
That is speedy.
You don't need it.
It is not that long ago when, you know, that was supercar territory.
Yeah, yeah. Like nothing could beat that. Like you were spending $200,000+, and you had a car that you could only drive like 10 miles before you had to get it serviced. And now you can just go electric crazy fast. So no, and you know, the chassis team over at Lucid is top notch. It drives great in regular mode, sprint mode, spirit mode. You know, it's such a God. They just drive super nice. It's really impressive what this company has done, especially as a first auto. You know, this is their first car. And they have a lot of really smart people over there, but you could really kind of sort of not, you know, you're just trying to get the car out. You're just trying to get the car out. And then you get it out. You're like, well, we can make tweaks for the next car. We make, you know, we can do this. But that's that, apparently that's not how Lucid rolls. It was comfortable. You know, the interior was really nice still. It still felt premium. It wasn't, you know, didn't have all the really, really fancy bits that they have in the other Lucid Light. But it was fine. It was really, yeah, it felt, it still felt like a luxury vehicle when you're driving it in the Pure. It's still, you know, 480 horsepower, which is, again, where are you going? Why do you need that much horsepower?
I mean, even the rear drive is 430.
Yeah, even the, come on. So, so I had the one with the 20 inch wheels. They have 19 inch wheels, which is 410 miles of range, which, that's a long way. That's a long way to go. And so, but I had the one with the 20 inch tires or wheels, and its range is 384 miles. Now on my range test, I had to use a different route this time because of, some scheduling things. And so I got 377 miles of range, but the caveat is that this other route, there's a lot less actual like sort of in-town driving in my route because I try to like mix it up. So it's like 50% highway and then 50% of like in-town driving and like sort of back roads driving. And this one had less in-town driving than my regular route. So 377, which is, you know, what is that, seven miles off their EPA. Mm-hmm. That's pretty much in line with what the EPA says based on, you know, just sort of doing these routes over and over again with all these different vehicles. That said, that's really impressive because Lucid, like Tesla, there's the 2-cycle and the 5-cycle test at the EPA. It doesn't matter. You don't have to like get, not to get too much into the weeds, but there's an adjustment factor that you can add in the automaker if you do the 5-cycle. And it's that adjustment factor, which is where Lucid and Tesla, sometimes they'll say, well, we get, you know, 400 miles. And then when we do the test, it gets like 380 or 370 with both of those vehicles. I feel like Lucid is, you know, has probably adjusted their efficiency and their motor and everything to actually hit those EPA numbers. You know, you hear people all the time saying, well, Tesla says it'll do 400 miles, but in reality, when I do my test, it's like 380, you know, it's under, or it's 370 or something. So I expected, you know, and I've had this on Lucids before where, you know, it was a really high number. And then I was like, you know, 20, 30 miles off of that number. It's still insane. Instead of 400 miles, I got 380 miles or something. Yeah. But with this one, it's pretty much dead on, which is a good testament to any sort of adjustments they may be making to these vehicles. So, yeah, or, you know, maybe they're just like adjusting their adjustment. So, yeah, it drives nice. Doesn't have all the bells and whistles. Doesn't have like the 50 cameras around it. But the dream drive I had, it just, you know, it was essentially just what do you call it? You know, when you follow other cars,
adaptive cruise control,
you know,
following other cars thing that it does. Yeah, that was great.
You know, it's really smooth. It does a really great job with adaptive cruise control. It's comfortable. You could totally go on a long road trip with this thing. I mean, 380 miles of range is nothing to sneeze at. That's like 7 hours of driving at least. So you're going to pull over anyway. And that's from a 92 kilowatt hour pack. So you're getting all these miles, and you're not doing it with this gigantic pack like you would with, say, a Silverado or even, you know, the F-150 Lightning. Is, you know, I have all this range, but it's going to take like 17 days to charge your charge your car, or the Hummer EV, which, you know, if you charge it at home, if you went to zero, it'd take like 2 or 3 days to like charge that thing. Yeah, you know, Lucid is there. You know, if you talk to Peter Rawlinson over there, the CEO, CTO, he's all about efficiency. He will talk your ear off about efficiency. And, you know, that really shows that, that's really important. I don't think the automakers talk enough about making these vehicles really efficient. In my test, I got a 4.1 miles per kilowatt hour, which is really nice, especially from a vehicle this size. So yeah, if you're looking at the Lucid Air and you've been like, oh, they're so expensive, you know, I can't afford, you know, over $100,000. If you can afford 80, which is, you know, not me, but if you're someone who can and you're looking around, you know, it's definitely something you should put on your list of vehicles to check out.
Excellent. Yeah. I mean, I remain a fan of the Lucid Air, and I think, you know, if I was going to get a pure, I would actually probably go with the 19s, the 19 inch wheels.
Yeah.
Just for that 19s. That extra little bit of sidewall. I mean, it depends on where you live, but, you know, certainly, you know, the Bay Area, you know, especially the North Bay Area, you know, there's some roads that can get a little rough. And here in Michigan, absolutely, you know, and having that extra little bit of compliance in the sidewall to absorb the road imperfections as such as they are, would be a very handy way to hopefully avoid some flat tires like I had the last time that I had an error last year.
Just, you know what? I don't get the big wheels. Don't. You're going to
they add weight, they take away trouble. Range.
Yeah.
You know, they look kind of cool, but they're just not very useful. They diminish add any functionality.
Yeah. They diminish comfort. There's just you're more likely to get like curb. Like then they brought the car to me. It already had curb rash on it. And I was like, well, I didn't do that.
Really?
Someone already curbed it. And I was like, oh, and I pointed to the guy who dropped it off. I'm like, I didn't do that. He's like, yeah. I just showed him. And then we talked about wheels and he's like, there's no, just get the smaller wheels. You're going to be happier it looks cool with the big wheels,
but you know, 19 inch wheels aren't exactly small.
Yeah. That's the other crazy thing. I remember 15.
Yeah, but like that's considered small, like the smaller wheels. I'm like, those are pretty darn big wheels to begin with there, buddy.
Yeah.
I remember my Honda had like 13s and then I put 15s on it. I was like, whoa.
Yeah, well, my Miata, you know, had 14s originally. It's got 15s on it now, you know, and they're, you know, that's gigantic. It's way bigger than most, you know, or 19s and 20s and 21s are way bigger than most people need.
Yeah, but, your wheels are probably going to be your tires are probably going to be cheaper too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
You will have to replace tires. I mean, you know that. In fact, you know, EVs go through tires faster than internal combustion vehicles do. So, you know, if think about that in terms of what you're going to have to spend a couple of years from now, you know, when you wear out those tires.
Yep.
Did you know you can support Wheel Bearings directly? Head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia and you can become a patron today. Your contributions will help fund the platforms and tools we use to bring the podcast to you. And exclusives and improvements are already on the way thanks to your generosity. So if you want to be part of an automotive podcast like no other, head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia. Yep. All right. Excellent. I also had an EV. In fact, briefly during the swap, because they were coming from two different places, I had two EVs in the driveway at the same time that were roughly similar, fairly close in price point. They're both in the low to mid 60s. They both have a nominal range of, you know, around 200 miles. They're both technically crossovers for whatever that means anymore. But the one that was going away, if I had to choose between the two, if I was spending $60,000+ on an EV and I had to choose between those two, the choice would have been easy. And it would not have been the Lexus RZ450E.
What would it have been?
The Kia EV6 GT that's in my driveway right now.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about that one next time. But the RZ450 is Lexus's take on the Toyota Subaru ETNGA platform. So this shares a lot with the Subaru Solterra and the Toyota BZ4X. And it's actually kind of it's kind of a mix. The hardware is kind of a mix of the front wheel drive and all wheel drive versions of the BZ4X, because the BZ4X there's two different batteries that they use. They're similar in size. One is a Panasonic battery that's 71.4 kilowatt hours. That's in the front wheel drive BZ4X. The all wheel drive has a CATL battery that's about 72 and a half kilowatt hours, so just slightly larger. For the Lexus, they went with the Panasonic battery. And on the Toyota, if you get front wheel drive, you get 150 kilowatt, roughly 200 horsepower front motor for front wheel drive. If you get the all wheel drive, they replace that 150 kilowatt motor with two 80 kilowatt motors, one at each end. So a little over 200 horsepower. So it keeps it close to the same power, regardless of your front or all wheel drive. For the Lexus, they kept the larger motor on the front axle from the BZ and added the 80 kilowatt motor. So you have, I think, a total of a little over 300 horsepower on this thing. And the Panasonic battery, because the Panasonic battery can charge it up to 150 kilowatts, whereas the CATL battery in the all-wheel drive BZ and the Subaru only charges up to 100 kilowatts. And even at that, from most tests, it typically doesn't get even to 90 kilowatts most of the time. So you get a little bit faster charging, a little, you know, it's definitely more power, more performance out of the RZ. It's arguably a bit better looking. It's still, I think, a little overstyled. It has a different take on the spindle grill. There isn't really a traditional grill, you know, Lexus grill. The design is interesting. The color was nice. I had the light blue, which they call Ether. Let's see. Let me find
do
my
they
notes
have orange?
Here. They do not offer an orange. Lexus does not do orange.
Oh, man.
So when I, you know, after I plugged it in, got it fully charged up, it showed 194 miles of range on there. It's this particular version because it was the RZ Luxury. They have the premium and luxury trims. The premium trim has 18-inch wheels. That one is rated at 220 miles for the one with the 18-inch wheels. With the 20-inch wheels, it's only rated at 196. I got it showed 194 on the cluster. After driving it around, I averaged 2.8 miles per kilowatt hour. And after doing some math, it worked out to it if I had completely drained it, it would have gotten just slightly over 200 miles. So it basically, you know, did slightly better than the EPA mileage rating. Although recently the guys at Outer Spec Reviews did their 70 mile per hour range test with the RZ. And so that's just straight up highway driving. You know, I did mixed driving. With straight up highway driving at 70 miles an hour, they only managed to get 174 miles out of the RZ, which is not great. It's really quite disappointing. On the plus side, the spec sheet for the RZ lists the maximum AC charging speed at only 6.6 kilowatts. But when I plugged it in, I was actually getting 7.2 kilowatts. So it actually charged a little faster than what it's technically rated at. So I don't know if the spec sheet is wrong or maybe they upgraded the onboard charger or what the deal was, but I got slightly better. So it charged a little faster, which is good given the limited range of this thing. He said it'll do a DC fast charge, you know, it peaks at 150 kilowatts, but it does drop off fairly early on and starts ramping down. So it can take quite a while to fully charge an RZ, just as it does with a BZ. The interior is really nice. There one complaint though is there is no glove box on the passenger side. So in the console, underneath the console, there's a storage space there, but that's all taken up by the owner's manual because there's no glove box in which to put the owner's manual. So there is a bin at the back end of the center console, which is it's fine. It's not particularly huge. But yeah, storage is kind of limited inside the RZ for all your stuff. You know, there's not a lot of nooks and crannies stuff. to put the detritus of daily life, as we have said before.
All your things.
Yeah, to put all your things. So you know, like if you look at my wife's car, I mean, she would definitely not do well with the RZ, or she would have to
learn a little discipline about what to keep in the car.
That's always my sad thing with driving press cars. I never have a ready store of napkins and extra straws in my glove box.
Yeah,
my napkins, actual car
the
always
napkins
has
things.
That.
I always have napkins in my cars.
I always have. I never think to put them in the press car, and inevitably that means I'm like sopping up something spilled with like the sleeve of my shirt or something. Because like, oh God, I just spilled this.
Usually it's I have to blow my nose or something.
I drink a lot of coffee, and coffee every now and then is drippy, and you're like, oh no.
That's
so
true.
You drink a lot of coffee, so you're jittery, is what you're telling us.
I drink a lot of coffee, and they're fancy, so I end up Starbucks is messy, and you bring the coffee cup across, and you put in the cup holder, you're like, crap, and it's like left a trail of coffee across your knees and the console. So there you go. Oh. Yeah,
the
personal problems.
You know, aside from the absence of storage, the interior of the RZ is nice. The materials are nice, you know, typical Lexus fashion. It's got the new, the current generation Toyota Lexus infotainment system, which is really good. It's a nice big 14-inch screen. It's got knobs for your temperature control and for volume, which is always a good thing. The back seats, roomy, decent amount of cargo space in the back. So, you know, it's not a bad place to be for drive. And, you know, I mean, we've said before, you know, 200 miles is actually enough for it's most people's
fine.
Daily driving. And it
most
is. And
your day, you're
yeah,
fine.
Yeah, it'll easily handle, you know, any, you know, if you have the ability to charge at home overnight, you can drive this thing no problem at all. And, you know, not have any issues with range. The only time it's going to be a challenge is if you want a road trip. And this is probably not your ideal road trip car because, again, the DC fast charging is not tremendously fast. And the range is, especially in highway driving, is kind of mediocre, especially for this price point. One other thing I wanted to note is the door over the charge port feels really flimsy. It's
really?
Plastic. Yeah. And between the hinge and the plastic panel that's on there, it just feels really flimsy.
That's a funny one to point out. And you don't normally mention it must genuinely feel that way. I don't think I've ever heard you comment that before.
Is it like an automatic door? Is it just one?
No, it's manual. Open? And you got to find just the right spot to press on it for it to pop open. Oh. So a lot of times, you know, I would be pressing on it like 3 or 4 times trying to find the right spot to get it to actually pop open. It's not a great design for the charge port door.
I really appreciate BMW's charge port doors. They're just like gas doors. You just like put plops open, plug it in.
Why do they have to open weirdly? They come out, they twist left, they twist
Lucid had one that like it pops out and it goes down and then
it pops open. Why is that? Is this a thing with EVs?
Stop it. Just
why do they feel the need to make this complicated?
Because they're like, it's just a future. I'm like, no, just give us, just no.
No, I like the past when it comes to this.
They want to make it feel like you're getting your money's worth. You're paying a premium for this car.
Flimsy door.
Yeah.
A little flimsy, weird, like, system that's going to break it whenever you know. It gets frozen, it won't open.
Yeah,
exactly.
And this one, you know, it just feels like, you know, I could... You know, very easily twist it and just snap it right off.
Snaps it right off.
Yeah. It does not feel robust at all.
So they got halfway there. They got the actual just little manual door, but then they bought the cheapest door.
Then they got the cheapest possible way they can make that manual door.
It's a plastic panel with a plastic hinge on it. It does not feel good, especially at this price point. So as equipped, the one I had was $66,375 for an RZ450E luxury.
Would you pay that? Would you buy that for that price, Sam?
No. No.
You thought about that.
There was
first.
No pause.
Like,
there was, no.
No, I would not. No, thank you.
I mean, if I'm going to spend 60 plus grand, this would not be the car I would buy for an EV. It would definitely be the EV6 GT.
Oh, yeah.
I love the EV6 GT, even though it doesn't get the range of the non-GT EV6. Don't care.
Yeah.
Totally worth an extra.
Well, it's still doing, it's still better. It's more efficient. It's, you know, it's getting better efficiency than the Lexus did.
Yeah.
But we'll talk about RG next time.
Charger's quicker.
Yeah. You can, 10% to 80% in, you know, 17, 18 minutes.
I did a bunch of math on Ars Technica about the EV6 GT versus the regular EV6. If you're super nerdy about math and timing and take the charge.
Oh yeah, I mean, drop that link in the show notes. Yeah.
Now I got to look it up. Oh man.
So guesses on the delivery charge for the RZ?
Ooh. Do you want to go first? Or do you want to go second?
I'll go first. I'll say $13.95. I don't know.
$1.
Robbie wins. $11.50.
Oh, it was pretty high though.
Yeah, a little bit higher than the Subaru was, but yeah. But not as high as some stuff we've had.
No, it could definitely be worse.
Yeah.
What's the highest one we've had? Have we had any?
I think the Hummer's like $2,000.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yes. You know, and I think the F-150s are like $17.95 now. Most of the big trucks are like $1,700, $1,800 now.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Oh, how? That's weird.
All right. Let's get on to some other topics.
Okay.
Sticking with EVs for the moment. Got a little bit of information on the 2024 model year F-150 Lightnings. One of the things that's changing for model year 24 is they're putting heat pumps on them.
Yay.
And
efficiency.
Some of the press release that Ford had said, it'll get 320 miles of range, and some of the news reports were indicating that this was an improvement in the range, but actually the XLT, the current 2023 Lightning XLT with the 18-inch wheels already gets 320 miles of range. So it's not clear if there is actually an improvement in efficiency or not. And Ford is being suspiciously vague about this.
Oh my gosh.
It's like
cagey.
Yeah, I think they haven't finished their EPA certification yet for the 24 model year, so they don't want to say anything specific until they get all the paperwork done. So we may actually see an improvement. So it may bump up by 10 or 15 miles of range,
right,
which will help, especially with the Silverado EVs now starting to get delivered. I think GM, when they reported their Q3 deliveries last week, I think they delivered something like 19 Silverado EV work trucks to fleet customers. So they're slowly starting to trickle those out to fleets. Most of the other stuff, they like the Lyriq and the Hummer, those numbers are definitely better. I think they did like something like 3,500 Lyriqs and about 12 or 1,300 Hummers in Q3. So they're getting a little better on deliveries.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Fully but surely.
Scooch better.
No word yet on the pricing, any pricing changes for the 24 model year Lightnings, or even when they will actually be delivered. But it is, they are all the trim levels will have a heat pump available on there. There's one other thing, which is there's a new trim level,
Flash,
which is the Lightning Flash, which is based on the XLT, but adds
us all, every one of us. Sorry, you can't just say Flash without that. Go ahead.
It's based on the XLT trim, but it adds a bunch of the tech features from the Lariat. So it's got the 15.5-inch screen and Blue Cruise and a bunch of other features on there. And it'll have a starting price of just under $70,000. So not cheap, but yeah, cheaper than a Lariat.
Yeah. Trucks aren't cheap. They just aren't.
No, they're not. And in fact, I saw something came out. The base price on the gas F-150s for model year 24 is going to be higher by about $2,000-$2,500.
So almost $40,000.
Yeah, but that's because it's not so much that particular configuration is necessarily more expensive, but the previous cheaper XL with the 3.3-liter naturally aspirated V6 is no longer going to be available. So they're just dropping the base model, the previous base model.
It's not really that it's getting more expensive. It's just they axed a trim.
Yes. Yeah. So they discontinued the cheaper version.
Womp womp.
What do you think of the Nissan Hyper Urban concept?
Hyper.
I like the name Hyper Urban concept. It looks pretty snazzy.
It's very polygon.
Yes.
It's very Polygonal?
It's Star Fox. Remember the game Star Fox for the Nintendo something or other?
I don't remember.
Vaguely.
It was like the first 3D game, and it was just like giant polygons. Anyway, that's what the
this description
Nissan
targets,
hyper-urban concept.
If this targets users such as urban and suburban-based professionals who prioritize environmental sustainability. That's some marketing speak.
Yes, absolutely. So this looks like it's, you know, roughly, I don't know, maybe somewhere between the Juke and the Rogue in certain terms of size. Maybe a little smaller than the Rogue, a little bit bigger than the Juke. Some elements of this design, you know, are kind of similar to what Hyundai was doing for a while on, like on the last generation Tucson. Or is it the current generation Tucson? I can't remember. With kind of this faceted design. It's an EV. It's an electric crossover.
Nothing about this is going to look like this as I look through these pictures. Have you looked at this?
Yeah.
I don't think any of these things are going to come to fruition, starting with the...
Oh, no, this is just somebody got bored.
This is
the
just
design.
Someone's
You don't think
fun.
That sharp edge there with the lights are on the front is going to make it to production?
I don't.
Sometimes you just need to stab people as you're driving.
You guys, you have to look at the second picture with the two people on the very cool lounge chairs in the back seat.
That is one of the neat features of this.
But yeah, look at the guy. Why is the way he is sitting in that chair look like he's folded like a Barbie doll? Like he has no action. There's something really weird about the mock-up of that. Like what happened when they inserted that? Like there's an uncanny valley there.
Yeah. Well, these are all renders. They're not actual photographs. Yeah.
I know, but she looks like a human and he looks like a Ken doll. Like his body isn't naturally bent. Like he has a weight. None of the joints are actually there. They just folded it.
You're right.
His legs are too short.
Right. Something's weird, right? Is it that? Is it his legs are too short?
Yeah. Well, and the way his hand is placed on his thigh.
Right. Like the fingers don't move. Like that is the Ken hand pose. Like,
yes, okay. you're absolutely right. He does look like a human Ken doll.
It's really weird. It's weird. Okay.
It's a little disturbing.
The seats are cool, though. The way it looks like it literally looks like a chaise lounge.
Yeah. I don't know if you looked at the B-roll video clip that's in there. It's only a little over a minute, but they actually show it. So this is a four seater, but the front seats. The rear seat backs or the front seat backs fold flat forward, and then the whole thing can slide back and nestle in just underneath the front edge of the rear seats. So it basically turns it into a two lounge chairs in there, and the front seats are gone. And then you've got a screen that pops up from the center console. So I guess you could sit in there and watch a movie, or if you were hanging out with your partner,
your fellow
overlooking, a sunset somewhere on a cliff. You could relax back there. It's kind of neat. One of the interesting things they talk about, they don't get into much in the way of technical details on this thing.
I'm watching the morphing seats. I just got to that part of the video.
They talk about, it'll have over the air. They talk about sustainability, in the, being able to last longer because you can have not only software updates but also hardware updates, like a replaceable dashboard, which seems the concept also applies sustainability to vehicle lifespan, making it ideal for people conscious of long-term value of everything they own. Hardware updates and regular software updates provide a fresh ownership experience over many years. For example, the interior can be refreshed with a new instrument panel that reflects the latest technologies and trends in graphic user interfaces. Now, it's not entirely clear from that sentence if that means you can actually physically replace the instrument panel or just entirely replace the graphical interface on the instrument panel. We'll see. I'm going to be in Japan this is going to be shown at the Japan Mobility Show in a couple of weeks. And I'll be there and I'll actually be with Nissan for a couple of days after the show. So we'll be learning a lot more about this and a couple of other concepts that they're going to reveal.
I want to pick if they let you sit in it, because sometimes they don't on the super fancy concept stuff. I want a picture of you sitting in those rear seats looking like a not Barbie doll. Do your best to look like him with your hand perfect. See if you can mock the Barbie doll look of that guy.
Yeah, I will do my best. So it'll be interesting to see what Nissan has to show at that, at the Japan Mobility Show, formerly known as the Tokyo Motor Show.
You just keep changing the names of things.
Yeah. Well, I mean, everything.
Well, the Geneva show is in Qatar, and it's still called.
It's so weird that the sign says Geneva Motor Show and then Qatar right above it, like literally on the same side.
Just the dumbest decision this year for shows. I was like, why?
Curious.
We couldn't get that room, so we decided to move all the way thousands of miles away and keep the name. We're like, all right, sure.
It's a little odd. I mean,
it is odd, but I'm sure that the folks in Qatar paid a healthy sum to get the Geneva organizers to bring their auto show to the Middle East.
Yeah, there's that. So they got some moolah.
Yes, they have a little bit of cash to spend.
That's what I've heard.
Okay. Piqua, Ohio. Who's ever heard of Piqua, Ohio?
I have not.
So it's someplace in Ohio, apparently.
It's in Ohio.
I have no idea where it is in Ohio. but apparently they've been sending end of life batteries or batteries from crashed vehicles, EVs there. And they have a former water treatment plant and a company called Energy Storage Response Group, LLC, has been using that facility for testing batteries, doing various kinds of tests, including burning the batteries. I think, you know, they're doing things like, you know, trying to develop procedures, processes for handling battery fires and that sort of thing. Apparently the local residents are not too thrilled about this. And so the company has agreed to immediately cease, their operations in Piqua. And so they're going to have to find somewhere else to test batteries.
Or batteries on fire, at least.
Yeah. Piqua is west. It looks like it's about a half hour west of Columbus. So it's in central Ohio.
So it's just like near some people. And they're like, hey, let's test some batteries. Let's light some things
on fire.
Let's
see what happens if we light this stuff on fire. And then they went, hey, don't light that stuff on fire by me.
Oh, come on. Figure this out, people. You don't need to do it next to and so yes, this stuff has to be done. Yes. Does it need to be done near some people? Probably not.
Yeah, it's the Piqua Public Safety Training Center is what they call the facility. And so they've been you know, burning batteries there and trying to figure out how to put them out. The locals are concerned about toxic emissions from this.
I mean, wouldn't you be if you had a giant lithium battery testing facility where they're just setting the batteries on fire to see what happens? Let's light her up, boys. Woo! What's that cloud of smoke in the front yard? Don't worry about it.
Someone lives near refinery. I live near a lot of refineries, and there will be shelter in place. You're like,
really? Do they really do that when things go sideways?
Oh yeah, it happens like once a month, and some places they're even closer to the refineries.
Oh my gosh.
There's a lot of shelter in place stuff that's around.
Do you in fact shelter in place when they do that?
Fortunately, I'm like sort of out of the zone for most of it. So, but we almost bought a house. Like you could like at night, the refinery would light up the night. It was like Blade Runner.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
So, have either of you ever gone to, and I think I can guess what the answer is going to be, but have either of you gone to charge up an EV at a DC fast charging station and had a vehicle that has capable of very fast charging speeds, but then found that somebody with a vehicle that could not charge very fast was using the fastest chargers?
Oh, on yeah. Occasion. Like the Hyundai, or the, you know, the Bolt connected to the 350 when a 150 is.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So how would you feel, you know, if somebody put a sign on the 350 kilowatt charger and, you know, that said, and I think, you know, reasonably, I don't, you know, the headline here from this Jalopnik story, you know, says bizarre passive aggressive notes.
Ooh.
I don't think it was that passive aggressive. You know, I think it was pretty reasonably written.
I'm trying to see the note.
It says this applies to owners of Chevrolet Bolt, EV, EUV, Hyundai Kona Electric, Nissan Leaf, Mazda MX-30, Mini Cooper SE, Smart EQ 4.2, Volkswagen e-Golf, Ford Transit EV, among others. Regina, which is the name of the particular charger that this was in an EVgo station, provides 350 kilowatts. But if your car is not capable of using it to full capacity, therefore, you are impeding faster charging cars from using it. Faster charging cars can get in and out quicker to the benefit of everyone. Please show courtesy and use Ernie or Florence, two of the other chargers at this location. This is near DFW Airport, Dallas-Fort Worth Airport. Please show courtesy and use Ernie or Florence to the left, west of Regina. For owners with under 100 kilowatt of charge rate, you will not experience slower charging on those, as they still charge your car faster than your car can handle. Please educate yourself on how EV chargers work and how to best utilize them for efficient charging.
Oh my God, this is way too long.
Here's the thing with this though. So here's the deal. I feel like it's kind of like when you have the handicapped bathrooms in a bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
If a handicapped person is there, I'm going to let the handicapped person use the bathroom. If there's no handicapped person there and the only stall that's open, I'm going to use the handicapped person bathroom and then get out as quickly as possible. I wouldn't use it if there was another option. But if there isn't another option, what if that's the only charger that's open? Now I'm not allowed to charge my car at that because I charge.
Well, you're allowed. You just gotta.
That's what I mean. But what if it's
the person who wrote this? The person who wrote this very long message.
Yes.
Like, hold on, let me read this message.
Like, but what if you like? Here's the thing. So, like, if you, I mean, I think you do. I think I like to hope people like if you have a slower charging vehicle, you go to the slower charging charger. But what if you have a slower charging vehicle and there isn't a slower charging charger open at the moment you get there? You don't know what it looked like when that person put their car there.
Yeah,
you don't know. Also, like,
yeah, I mean, the
if you put your car there and you walked away and had lunch, it could be that during lunch it cleaned out, but you're still having lunch. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Also, just the these companies, you're getting mad. I mean, yes, should you be charging your Bolt at a 350 when there's clearly a 150 right next to it that's open? No. Also, but most people, you know, a lot of people don't really think about that. They don't, you know, you go to a gas, you know, not all the gas pumps are different unless you're getting diesel. And I think only once in my entire life did someone say, hey, can I use that pump because my car is diesel? And I said, oh yeah, once. I've filled up gas billions of times, I think, at some point in my life.
And you're not going to be there more than a couple of minutes anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's such a weird thing. And it's also the charging companies, you need to just put 350s everywhere. Just be done with it.
That would be the thing. And gradually do that. Yeah.
And to their credit, you know, when EA replaced all of the chargers at my local station here last fall, they did that. Because previously there were four 150s and two 350s. And mm-hmm. now, except for the one that had a Chatham Oak dispenser on it, they left the 150 there. The other five are all 350s now. And yes. So it doesn't matter anymore. But prior to that, there were instances where I would get there and, you know, not all of the 150s were in use, but there were cars, including a Bolt one time when I wanted to charge a GV60 that was there. One of the two 350s at the time was out of order. The other one was being used by a Bolt and there were three 150s open. So, you know, that was kind of annoying.
Yeah. And there's people like, well, you know, it'll actually charge at 160. So I'm going to charge at the 350 when my car is supposed to charge at 1. And it's like, yeah. So, yeah, in Novato, where they have all the EA 350s, they're all 350s now.
Yeah.
Just all of them.
Which is great.
And then here near my house, all the EA stations, all 150s. So you're just like, well, that's what you get.
Yeah.
Suck it up. That's all you got.
Yeah. But if you know better, you know, be a nice, you know, just make the right decision.
I feel like people but sometimes, you know, make the right decision, but you can't because it takes time to charge your vehicle.
But
you don't know what it looked like when you got there. You don't know.
But it's also this such a, so much to read. And it doesn't help. But what is it? Super and ultra? Like, I don't know which one is which.
Yeah.
Or mega and
hyper, hyper,
super, and ultra, mega, hyper,
hyper, and ultra.
Yeah.
What the? I still don't know which one's which. I do know that yesterday when I had to charge the EV I'm driving now, there were three stations. They were set up in a way where you couldn't use both sides because they were too close together for the parking spots.
Oh God.
Yeah. So there was that, and then I pulled into the middle one, and it's like roulette. You're like spin the wheel. Which one's gonna work? Pick a number, and I happened to pick the right one because the one to the right just was stuck on. And it's like, it's been charging for 1,000 minutes. And
oh my God.
And the one to the left, a person in a Mercedes and an EQS like pulled up and they couldn't get theirs to work. Mine worked fine. But it was just like, that's not how this is to be working.
I agree with you, you know, that the charge point operators need to basically just make them all max the same speed. Because, you know, we're going to get more and more vehicles that have higher charging speeds.
I think it'll charging go that capability. Way gradually is and, the, it'll yeah. happen, you know.
And, yeah. you know, but we also need, you know, some education for people, oh, especially first time EV buyers, about mm-hmm. things like, you know, the fact that EVs don't charge at a constant speed all the way through. It's like, if you don't need to go to 100%, you know, stop when you get to 80. Yeah. Things like that.
I can't tell you how many times I'm at a charging station. Someone pulls up and they're clearly lost because they've just bought an EV. And I just walk over. I'm like, hey, how's it going? They're like, you know how this works? And I explain to them how to charge their car because they bought the car and the people at the folks at the dealership just gave them no zero information because clearly they probably didn't know either.
But or they were like that's, embarrassed that's partly, to ask. That's but partly you, on the dealership, but it's also partly on the human. Like, seriously, people. You wouldn't like, did you buy gas cars? Like, I don't know, this one works and just give them 30 grand and walk away. Like, you ask questions when you buy a gas car. Ask questions if you're buying
actually,
a
you would
or
be
a
surprised.
Or an EV. But I feel like that's like people are stupid. Then, like, ask questions. Don't jump into new technology. Like, I don't know how this stuff works. We'll see what happens.
People are embarrassed. Stuff. People don't ask. Yeah,
people don't like to admit that they don't understand stuff. Okay.
Until they're at the charging station and I'm there and they're like, hey, let's talk to this guy.
I mean, is that really better?
He seems he knows what's going on.
You were the, did you look less stupid asking at the dealership, I don't know how this works, or less stupid, I bought it and I don't know how it works. I'm asking also, Robbie at a charging station.
There's a power dynamic at the dealership as well.
Yeah.
Where you're, you know, yeah, because you're trying, you feel like you already feel like you're getting one pulled over on you because
you're
the dealership
shafted.
Is,
you know,
yeah,
it,
you already right? feel like you're being shafted. So you have this, you want to be like,
you just
want to
get out of there.
Maybe. Yeah, there's also that. So you want to get out of there and you want to not look stupid because, you know, as soon as you give them an inch, they're going to be like, oh, by the way, you're going to need to pay an extra $2,000 for the charging bearings. Yeah. Like, oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, you've just spent the last hour in the F&I office with the guy trying to decline all of the extended warranties that he's trying
all
to
all 800 of them. That's true. I guess. Yeah. I don't get it but, though. Like, yeah, I'm not dealers, afraid to look like I don't know what I'm talking about. I'd be like,
I should start a company.
That's because
where
you're
I just
a woman.
Stand as-
Men are genetically incapable of asking for
of
help.
Asking questions. Oh, is that like yeah, asking there's also for directions. That.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
We can't let people know that we're dumb.
We'd rather prove it through our actions than to actually just
prove
ask for
that
help.
You're dumb by showing up and not knowing how to plug exactly. in, rather than just asking a question. Yeah. Okay.
All right. Speaking of first-time EV buyers, Volvo is clearly targeting some of them with the new EX30. They announced the pricing for the EX30. And it's going to start in the U.S., like U.S. pricing this is. It's going to start at $34,950, which is, I think, the cheapest Volvo of any kind in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Volvo doesn't make cheap cars. Well, up until, well, relatively speaking.
Now it does.
Until now.
Have either of you had a chance to drive the EX30 yet?
I'll be driving it in another week.
There's like a thing happening, yeah.
Yeah, I think not this coming week, but the week after I will have gotten my hands on it and had a chance to drive it.
Oh,
so
at
far
the,
I've just
at the,
seen
the
it.
NACTOY drive?
Yeah. Well, they're doing a huge thing in Spain.
Oh, okay. You're going to that one.
Barcelona. Okay. Barcelona.
So after that, as it stands, I've only looked at it in their reveal that they did in New York, and it looks great.
Yeah, except it doesn't have an instrument cluster in front of the driver.
Yeah.
Or rear wheel window.
Yeah, there's
rear wheel. It doesn't have a rear wheel.
Oh yeah, it doesn't have the switch. It's like VW. They skip the switches for the rear windows. You have to select something to.
How much was that? Was that what kept it under 35?
That's what they did. They
apparently,
just changed
teeny
that
tiny little switch. Is that the thing? Is that what you need? And then I turn around. There's my Kona in my driveway, and I'm like, oh no, that's not what you need because mine has rear window switches.
So have either of you had to get body work done on a car recently?
Not recently.
Knock on wood. No, I have not.
Well, apparently, if you have a Rivian, it can be quite pricey if you get a little fender bender. And if your fender gets bent, you may want to just leave it that way. If you can avoid it, a Rivian R1T owner in Georgia, I believe. Got a little, a fairly minor fender bender, with his R1T, took it to, the Rivian service center, or actually it was a Rivian approved body shop. Cause I don't think Rivian actually has any body shops at their service centers yet there. So it was a Rivian approved body shop. And one of the downsides of the Rivian design, because it's this unibody design, it has one massive on each side, one massive sheet of stamped metal that forms the entire body side from the tailgate all the way down the sides, over the roof, down to the A-pillar. That's all one big piece of metal.
Wow.
And this is a relatively minor dent in the left rear corner in the bodywork, just below the taillight. So it didn't even shatter the taillight or anything. And he was quoted $41,000 to fix
crazy.
It because they were going to just, replace that entire body panel, which of course requires a massive amount of labor and taking stuff apart to replace an entire body panel like
thing
that.
They have this on a McLaren, but it's also a McLaren. So you got that going for you.
Yeah.
And it's actually on the top. So I don't think it's even, actually it's not even the McLaren issue. Never mind. Carry on.
So, this owner did some research and he found a shop called about 500 miles away that does paintless dent repair. He reached out to them and they quoted a much lower price, like $3,500.
That's a little more reasonable
to do it, basically to bang out this dent in the quarter, in the rear corner of the car. Of the truck. So he had it, he put it on a flatbed, had it shipped 500 miles to the shop. They spent about 10 hours. It's a fair amount of labor because it's a hard to access spot in this corner here, take off the rear bumper. And there was like one little hole. There's a video in the link, on the Autoblog post that you can watch and see how they did it. But it was, it's not a trivial thing, but they were able to fix it. For $3,500.
Nice.
Was there an explanation as to why Rivian's deal? I mean, is it like, I feel like that should just be $30,000.
They didn't have the shop he took it to, didn't have the expertise to do this process. Cause basically what they do is, they put some tools, that are with adhesive on the sheet metal and load it up, basically use it to pull out the part that's dented in.
Right.
So they use some weights and stuff to essentially yank on it and get most of it out there. And then they reach up inside through this one little gap in the bottom corner after you take the bumper off and basically keep tapping it out and until they get it back to the original contour.
Okay.
Yeah.
It didn't require any drilling. It didn't require any painting. There's like one little spot, right on the edge of where the sheet metal bends over by the tailgate there. One tiny little spot that's going to require a little touch up. But other than that, I mean, it looks good. It looks basically really indistinguishable from the way it did originally. Nice. And so if you have a Rivian or, anything else, and this is actually a problem with a lot of newer vehicles where they're having these very large body panels, that, if there's some damage, then it can, the repair costs can easily get out of control. And the insurance company wanted to total right off the truck rather than do the repair.
I get it. It was 41,000 from purely a numbers point of view.
Yeah.
That makes sense. But you're like, what? You're going to total it for this?
Yeah. Even though it was perfectly drivable, there was nothing else wrong with it.
You could get a Rivian with a salvage title because it has a teeny tiny dent in the back.
Yeah. and then spend $3,500 to fix it. This is something that, you know, vehicle owners, you know, if you get a fender bender, you know, do some, before the insurance company, you know, decides to write something off, do a little research, and you may be able to find somebody that actually can fix it for a lot less money. But so mean, they're go ahead.
Yeah. The giant panel thing. I mean, it looks cool. Looks smooth, but there's no, like, it's like the giant casting issue that's going on now.
Well, that's what I was just going to mention, you know, is these so-called giga castings that Tesla's using on some of their vehicles. Now, one of the issues with that, you know, it, you know, by replacing a whole bunch of stampings that they weld together to make the structure of the vehicle with a giant die cast aluminum piece, it makes it a lot simpler to assemble the vehicle. It takes a lot less steps to put the vehicle together. But the problem is those castings, unlike the steel stampings, they don't bend when you get into a crash, and they're effectively unrepairable.
And you can't, like, take that part off and put the new part on. You're like, okay, let's check the tolerances of all the parts. All right, these three need to come off. We replace those three. It's just one big piece. And they're like, well, that's the end of that.
Basically, the whole front end or the whole rear end of your car is going to be thrown away. And chances are, you know, a lot more of those are going to end up totaled, even though if they were built in a more traditional manner, they could have been fixed. So this is one of those things, you know, like what we talked about earlier with that Nissan concept, you know, with making vehicles last longer and that being part of sustainability. Same thing goes with the way you design a vehicle. Yeah. You know, if you design something so that it becomes unrepairable, you know, or, you know, take most modern phones or laptops, you know, that, you know, you end up, if something small, relatively small and minor goes wrong with it, you end up having to throw that thing away, and you've wasted a lot more resources than if you had just designed it to be serviceable in the first place.
Yeah.
I think Toyota is doing this. They're looking into giga casting, aren't they?
Oh, everybody Toyota? Is. Every manufacturer is. Yeah. And I think what we're going to end up finding is that, you know, manufacturers will end up using castings, but not going to the extreme that Tesla is, where you have just one giant casting that forms the entire front structure and another one that forms the entire rear structure, but using smaller components that are combined with some stampings, you know, so you can actually service it.
Yeah. Well, I foresee a lot more Tesla motors and batteries being used in retro mods or resto mods. So we got that going for us.
That's true. Yeah. There is that. Sticking with Rivian, they've finally started delivering their Max Pack, which is a 160 kilowatt hour battery pack. And so you can get that now on the R1T and the R1S with certain configurations. So they started off with their large pack. They also have the standard pack, which is a lithium iron phosphate battery pack. So on the R1T with the dual motor, the original large pack gets you 352 miles of range. The standard pack gets you 270. The max pack gets you 410 miles of range. Mm. And it's a $16,000 premium over the standard pack.
Oof. That's a lot of money to tow. Because that's the only reason I could think of to buy it. You get this giant pack.
Yeah.
Really?
I guess if you love towing, I mean, a fifth wheel is what?
Well, you're not going to tow a fifth wheel with this anyway.
That's true.
Right.
I guess towing people. You tow the boat, you're going to the lake. Going to the lake, I need to tow my Rivian. Yeah.
Well, you know, here in Michigan, you know, you on any Friday afternoon or Sunday afternoon, you know, pretty much throughout the year, you know, in the summertime, you're going to see trucks and SUVs towing boats and jet skis up, you know, up I-75 to northern Michigan. You know, and to get to like Traverse City, it's about 250 miles. And it, you know, then same thing coming back on Sunday afternoons, Sunday evenings. And then in the wintertime, it's snowmobiles, towing snowmobiles.
There you go.
And so
the Max Pack.
Yeah. The Max Pack, you know, could be useful in that case.
Yeah. Yeah.
You should be able to get that 250 miles of range out of it.
Batteries are expensive.
They are.
That's what we're learning today, kids.
That's what we're learning. Batteries are pricey.
Batteries are pricey.
Take care of your batteries. It's pretty much all EV stuff this week.
It is all EV all the time.
Yeah. Home Depot is apparently planning to phase out gas powered lawn equipment. So lawn mowers and other stuff. And for some reason, the link
is not working.
Is not working.
It works for me.
I believe you. Oh, is it not working for you, Sam?
It works for me.
No.
Aren't you special,
people in California? Well, so when I was a kid, I worked on a farm and I also did landscaping. I had like a little business. I did landscaping for apartment buildings and I had gas powered things. And when we bought our house, I did not buy anything gas powered because it's no. Everything we have, all of our stuff is EV. It's all battery powered and it's so much nicer.
Yeah. Oh, tell me about it.
Yeah, let me mix the oil with the two stroke.
I know. Oh, and especially the first time in the spring that you're using the string trimmer or the mower, you know, when it's been sitting for 4 months, 5 months, and it's like
taking the stupid little spark plug that I clean it, put it to
So I found a different link. So I found the story. What is it? This one says they expect that by 2028, 85% of its outdoor lawn equipment will be electric.
Yeah. Now it's just, we have all of our electric stuff and it's just charge it, take it off the charger, plug it into the thing, walk over, or cut it, or do whatever, and then just put it back in the charger. My garage doesn't have oil and gas cans everywhere. I don't have to like go with this, buy the special additives. I don't have to like deal.
I would like to have nothing. I would want an electric snowblower. That's what I want.
I bought an electric snowblower last year.
Does it?
It
work?
Is fantastic. Yes,
it's like all that torque. Deep snow, like real, like honest to God, like school's canceled.
Yeah,
snow.
It'll. You know, I used it with like 8-inch deep snow, no problem at all.
Because yeah. I hate it, because that's the worst. Like it's this beautiful snowy morning, everything's snowy, and then it's like brrrm, and everybody starts up, and the noise of the entire neighborhood snow blowing their driveways is actually awful.
I have now replaced all of the gas power. I don't own an EV yet, but I've replaced all the gas powered equipment except for the generator for when DTE fails us. I still have a gas generator for that, but for everything else, the snowblower, you know, when we bought this house almost 7 years ago now, I left the gas powered lawnmower at the other house when we sold it.
Really?
And I bought an electric lawnmower. And it's been great. I have an electric snowblower. I have an electric string trimmer. My leaf blower is electric. Yeah, it's all.
We have electric everything else. I think the only thing we have that's not at this point is the snowblower, honestly.
I was concerned about it. I watched a whole bunch of videos, you know, read the reviews and found one that I think, you know, would handle, you know, my driveway, clearing my driveway. It's an Ego. It's a single stage snowblower. And it came with two batteries, so 56 volts, two batteries, and it had no problem at all clearing my, you know, like 8 inches of snow out of my entire driveway.
I just Googled, and they're actually, I had no idea there were some, I knew that there were the little tiny ones.
Yeah.
You know, the ones that are really just like for clearing your step.
Yes.
But they make some big ones too.
Oh, yeah. And you can get bigger, you know, like two stage snow blowers now, you know, they have more battery, and it works great. I used it, I don't know, 5 or 6 times last winter, and it was fantastic.
Okay, I just like the name. This is called the Snow Joe.
Yeah, that one, Ego and Snow Joe, are kind of the two big brands for snowblowers, electric battery-powered snowblowers.
I feel like Snow Joe sounds like it's going to be able to do the job. The Snow Joe, that's the one you want to take care of your snowy driveway.
For outdoor equipment, outdoor power equipment, going batteries has been fantastic for me. I have no complaints.
The only issue is like if you buy like a different brand for each one, now you have, you know, 5 different types of batteries.
My husband has gone with Ryobi everything. So everything is a Ryobi battery.
Exactly.
Yeah, for the smaller stuff, I've got the Ryobi One Plus system, the 18 volt batteries. So my drills and impact drill and assorted other impact wrench and assorted other stuff and the string trimmer are all the Ryobi. But the two big ones, the lawnmower and the snowblower, those are unique. And I couldn't find a suitable snowblower with the same, that used the same batteries as the lawnmower. Otherwise I probably would have got that one.
Yeah.
But
the Ego people, they're coming out with a mini bike.
Oh, are they?
So you know. Yeah. They have a little powered mini bike I found a few weeks ago. So
nice.
I'm just saying, if you just buy, if you have a couple Ego things, you could get a little mini bike.
So then you can have the same battery power your snowblower as you power your mini bike.
Yeah.
So in the wintertime, you use the battery in the snowblower. In the summertime, you use it in your mini bike.
The e-bike. This works.
Okay, whipping around the neighborhood.
Guys. We got this.
Yeah. Just saying.
All right. Last one has to do with the strike that is still ongoing by the UAW against the Detroit automakers. And there was some big news on Friday. One of the big issues with this strike, and you know, when people first started asking me about this last spring, you know, which company I thought that the union was going to target, because traditionally when it comes up to contract time, usually about 2 or 3 weeks before the contract expires, you know, they start off a couple of months before with the UAW negotiating with all three automakers, and then when they get to about 3 weeks out from the deadline, they'll, whichever one they're furthest along with, they'll usually, or whichever one they think they can get the best deal from, they will target that one, and they'll pause the negotiations with the others and just, you know, extend do an extension on the contract until they settle with the target. So they pick a target, and then if there's a strike, you know, they strike that one company, and the union has never gone on strike against Ford, GM, and Stellantis or Chrysler at the same time. They'll do one and then or another if they have to, but they never do all three. This is the first time they've done all three. And a lot of people were asking me, a lot of media were asking me, you know, which one you think they're going to target? Because a lot of people were expecting it was going to be Stellantis, because Sean Fain, the new president of the union, came up through Stellantis. That's where he started working, at a Belvidere, Illinois assembly plant. And he came up through the ranks at Stellantis and through the union ranks. And there was some antipathy towards Stellantis because they just closed the Belvidere plant earlier this year. I figured all along that it was probably going to be GM, because the issue was going to be the battery plants. They want more money, they want better benefits and stuff, as they usually do, which is fine, but the real sticking point was going to be the new battery plants, because the battery plants that the automakers are investing in are all joint ventures, almost all, there's one exception, but so they're joint ventures between the automakers and the battery companies. And so far the first of those that has come online is the Ultium Cells plant, which is a GM-LG joint venture in Ohio. And that one, the workers there voted to join the UAW, and they're still trying to get their first contract there. And because, you know, part of the one of the several reasons why they made these joint ventures instead of wholly owned parts of the automakers is, as separate companies, they figured they could pay the workers there less. And that's what they were doing. They were paying them significantly less than the people in GM plants were getting. It was like $16 an hour at the Lordstown battery plant. And, that was going to be an issue for the workers there, for the union. And one of the issues that the union had is that they wanted the battery plants to be part of the National Master Labor Agreement. And the automakers hadn't really talked about this until last week, when Ford had a press conference and Jim Farley came out and said, look, our battery plants aren't even finished yet. They're still under construction. We haven't hired anybody. We don't want to put these under the master agreement until we've actually hired people and those people have voted to actually join the union. Well, this week on Friday, GM became the first of the automakers to say, yep, we'll agree to put the battery plant workers under the National Master Agreement. They're going to get paid the same as all the other parts plant workers at GM. They're still trying to finalize an agreement there, but that's the first kind of breakthrough that the unions had. And that's going to be important for the union, because in the near term, the next few years, they're not really going to be losing jobs because they're still going to be building a lot of internal combustion vehicles. But 5, 8, 10 years from now, a lot of those engine plants, transmission plants, are going to be losing jobs as they shift to electric. And they need to have those battery plants unionized to maintain their membership and you know, make sure that those people get paid the same as the people that were working in the plants that are closing. And so it's a big issue for the workers.
Yeah, you know, it's the people are like, oh, we're losing jobs building cars. I'm like, I think everyone forgot about the battery plants that these have to, all these companies have to spin up. I mean, we're talking about tens of thousands of jobs.
New stuff starting.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, there's
about 40 or 50,000 people across all the battery plants that have been announced.
Yeah. So So stuff's coming for, you know, there's just new skills. Over at SAE, we have like a whole battery academy that you can do. Like classes you can take that help you get up to speed for that. So that's part of my job over there at SAE is helping, figuring out what companies need. And then, we just tell people, you know, via my articles when they eventually go up, when we launch this portion of the site. These are the skills that these companies are looking for. And you can either get those skills either locally, a lot of companies like Hyundai, they're partnering with local, you know, technical colleges, or they're spinning up like training within the area. But if you don't live in the area, like, you know, SAE and we have this battery academy, you can take classes, you can learn about all these portions of EVs and batteries and the grid and all this stuff. So, you know, getting everyone skilled for these jobs is like a really big deal for us over there, because there's not enough people who are skilled at these. They just don't have these skills because they didn't need them before.
Yeah, they're different. They're doing different things in these plants, you know, rather than dropping gears into a transmission, you know, they've got to have different skill sets.
Yeah.
Takes a little time to get. Yeah. It's a change in skill sets, but there is, still just jobs doing something different, but still building car stuff.
Yeah.
Still got to make the vroom vrooms.
Even though they got to make the vroom vrooms.
I guess they don't go vroom vroom. They all make a weird different noise.
Well, they could go vroom vroom. I mean, some of them do.
You can make any sound.
Yeah, you can make any sound you want.
Right.
I just open the window and yell it. Vroom vroom. And drive around. That's what I do. Driving around my little Kona electric yelling vroom vroom.
Vroom. Hey, there's Robbie. Vroom vroom. I heard him.
Vroom vroom.
And, you know, to those out there, and I'm sure there's probably some that are listening that, you know, may not be fans of unions or the UAW. Yeah. You know, just keep in mind that, you know, unions like the UAW and yes, the UAW has had some issues and other unions have had issues with corruption. But they've done a lot, certainly in the UAW in the last couple of years to try to root that out. And, you know,
yeah, there's a big change over there with that.
Hopefully, you know, under Sean Fain, you know, that will all change. But, you know, it's because of the efforts of unions, especially in the early part of the 20th century, we have things like, 40-hour work week and paid vacations and, you know, healthcare and weekends and, you know, all that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Nice things.
And, a middle class, the middle class that's been shrinking over the last 40 years as unions have shrunk.
Yeah. Collective bargaining. Yeah. If you try to bargain by yourself, it's just you against an entire corporation. That's a tough.
Yeah.
But I did the thing.
My dad was, he was in a union, worked in a steel mill for 30 years, was part of the United Steelworkers. And, they had to went on strike several times over the years. But, in the end, it was a benefit to everybody. So. All right. Anything else for this week?
I think that's about it for me.
Cool.
I got nothing.
All right.
Got nothing except zoom, zoom.
Zoom, zoom, everybody.
Zoom, zoom. Till next time. Bye.
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 Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.